Military suicides are at record levels. Every day, a U.S. soldier commits suicide, and the epidemic appears, if anything, to be getting worse. Mark Thompson, Times Deputy Washington Bureau Chief, and Nancy Gibbs, the magazine's Deputy Managing Editor, collaborated on an article called The War on Suicide for the current issue of their magazine, in which they investigate the causes and what the Pentagon is doing to address it. I'm pleased to welcome Mark Thompson and Nancy Gibbs to our show today. Hello.
Hi, nice to be here.
Good morning.
An active duty soldier commits suicide every day, and the rate is even worse among veterans. One of them commits suicide every 80 minutes. Has anything like this happened during and after previous wars, World War I, which seemed to damage so many soldiers, or Vietnam?
Well, the military, Leonard, didn't really keep good records on suicides until the early 80s. They were able to do some going back to the 70s, but it hadn't been a big issue. Remember, most soldiers used to come in, do their tour of duty, and then go home. They didn't hang around for tour after tour, and so we don't have good, accurate data going back into history.
You're right. Well-trained, highly disciplined, bonded to their comrades, soldiers used to be less likely than civilians to kill themselves, but not anymore. Any idea of what's changed?
Well, go ahead, Nancy.
I think one of the things that was most surprising in Mark's reporting, and Mark has been covering this topic for a long time, and I am much newer to it. And so what surprised me was that what we think might be driving this, the statistics don't bear it out. So, for instance, the idea that a lot of this has to do with the trauma that soldiers have experienced in combat, about a third of the soldiers committing suicide have never deployed, and 43% only deployed once. And so likewise, the idea that this is about not being willing to seek mental health counseling and services because of the stigma associated with that, again, 41% of the people who ended up killing themselves had received outpatient counseling. And so it turns out to be a much more layered and complicated problem. And that's one reason why when you go looking for answers, the Pentagon has not been able to find any that are really satisfying.
And you note that only 3% of the people who've committed suicide have had traumatic brain injury. That's something that goes against everything that I've heard. There have been a number of suicides among football and hockey players who've suffered from head trauma, and people have connected the two again and again.
Well, I believe that's true, Leonard. I don't know where you're getting that number. I mean, the fact of the matter is that...
The 3%? It's in your article. I have a little chart right in front of me.
Well, it may be diagnosed TBI, but TBI is tough to diagnose. And plainly, both PTSD and TBI dramatically increase someone's chances of committing suicide.
I would imagine so. There's a theory that people who feel useful and feel part of a community are less likely to commit suicide. Why doesn't that seem to apply to active duty troops anymore? Is it simply the TBI and the PTSD?
I think one thing that we have heard from a great many soldiers returning from combat, and Mark wrote a remarkable cover story in November called An Army Apart that got at this as well, is that the idea of unit cohesion, the bond that soldiers have with their comrades when they are in combat, when they are deployed, takes a real hit when they come home, and they often are either separated from their unit or they find that their daily routine is very different. In our story, we take a deep look at two officers in particular who both killed themselves on the same day in March, and we tell their story as a way of getting at the larger issues. And in one case, one of the widows said, you know, when he came back from Iraq, as an Apache helicopter pilot, that he it was hard for him to adjust to the relative lack of routine, the downtime that he had, because his days when he was deployed were so structured. He was, you know, part of this band of brothers, and that adjustment is one thing that may be very difficult for many returning service members, especially National Guardsmen and reservists who find themselves separated from their brothers and having to make an adjustment that I think has become increasingly difficult.
But they can't bond with their wives and children and the rest of their family and their friends?
Certainly those supports are very important, but that is different than the kind of climate that they were operating in when they were in theater.
Now, the Army had clear warning signs that both of these men were at risk. Can you tell us what happened to each of them?
Well, the trouble, Leonard, goes like this. Everybody has bad days, and people in the Army have bad days just like journalists have bad days. And the secret always is trying to figure out which stressors and which triggers are going to push a soldier over the edge. And frankly, nobody knows that. There is no fingerprint for suicide, and that's been one of the real problems. If you dealt with every soldier who, you know, was depressed or anxious, we wouldn't have time to fight wars, basically. So what the military is trying to do is come up with a finer set of filters, and it's very crude, and it's quite impractical to do it in a wholesale way and think you're going to get retail quality. I mean, General Peter Chiarelli, who until January was the top suicide fighter in the U.S. Army as the Army's number two officer, is pretty excited by a program down at Emory that involves intense therapy for soldiers. But the initial visit is 2 hours long, and it requires an awful lot of psychiatric care, which neither the Army, the government, nor the American taxpayer is seen willing to pay for yet.
So is it just a matter of money? One of the soldiers who committed suicide on March 21st, 2012, which isn't all that long ago, was left on hold on the Pentagon's crisis hotline for 45 minutes, and that was the day he took his life. The other soldier's wife expressed her concerns to her husband's superiors, but she was just dismissed.
Well, there is the problem that there are just too few mental health professionals to meet the need. You know, the irony here is that the services are competing with the VA and with the civilian hospitals for these professionals. There aren't enough of them to go around. The Army has about 80% of the counselors that it is thought to need. And so some of this, yes, it's heartbreaking to hear, you know, the last text message that one of our officers sent to his wife was, you know, still on hold, where he had been on a suicide hotline for 45 minutes without getting an answer. And that was on the same day that he had gone to try to seek treatment at a resiliency center and was told that the wait was 2 hours and he would need to come back later.
The Pentagon allocates just 4% of its $53 billion annual medical bill to mental health. That's about, $2 billion a year. The suggestion here, obviously, is that it should be more. Why isn't it more? Because the money is going toward prosthetic devices and other important things?
Well, the problem, of course, is that we don't know the answer to preventing suicide. So doubling the money to prevent it probably isn't going to yield a reduction in half in the rate of suicides. I liken it to a floodlight. You know, every suicide is different. The stressors vary by person, by soldier. And what works for soldier A may not work for soldier B. But if you double the money, you're probably going to get fewer suicides. And certainly when soldiers reach out for help, their wait times won't be as long. But it's not, money is not the total answer to this problem. Some of it is coming off of the wars, that will reduce some stressors, and that by itself will lead to a reduction in suicide over time.
Now, there are women serving in the military now and going to the front, to Afghanistan and Iraq, but the statistics are really fascinating. 95% of the suicides are male. 80% of them are white. And 47% are under 25. Why males rather than females, and why young rather than old?
I think this may reflect, you know, a pattern in the general population as well, that women attempt suicide more often, but men succeed at committing suicide more often. I think the military overall is about 14% female, and so, yes, the suicides are disproportionately male. And in the case of the stories that we tell, both were not only men, they were officers, they were highly trained, they were highly educated, they had very bright futures. And so some of the factors that I think we know to be sources of stress, whether it's economic concerns, the high unemployment rate among veterans, some of the factors that have contributed to the veteran suicide rates, which, as you suggested early on, are also very high, do not apply here, which, again, points to what a mystery this is. And as Mark says, you know, that there is no one answer, no one solution, and therefore no one program that needs to be scaled or funded better.
I'm talking with Nancy Gibbs and Mark Thompson of Time magazine. We're talking about the ballooning suicide rate among people both serving in the military and people who have returned from the military. And listeners are calling in with some suggestions. One asks, could this be partly a class problem, since so many soldiers come from the lower and middle classes, which are dealing with other community struggles?
Well, that's true. I mean, as Nancy just said, generally, suicides happen to the younger, the less educated, the less well compensated. So to the degree the military is reflective of that larger cohort, it is a class issue.
And then they're coming back to a situation where there's an 8% unemployment rate, and they are suffering from it just like everyone else. But I'd assume that will be hitting them particularly hard when they come back, with the assumption that they're going to get a job right away.
Well, that was one of the reasons I thought in this story, a lot has been written about the suicide crisis among veterans, too. I think the Paul Reichert of the IAVA says that 37% of their members of Afghan and Iraq veterans know someone who have killed themselves. But we focus in this piece on active duty military personnel, exactly because this is not a matter of people who have left the military and had trouble in facing this economy, which is a very real problem for many families. You know, these men and women are still officially sort of under the care and protection of the Department of Defense, and yet they too are subject to this problem at record levels. We're on pace this year to have potentially the highest rate since the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan began 10 years ago, which is really a remarkable figure. Even as these wars are winding down, the suicide rate this year spiked by 18%.
Now, 95% of the people committing suicide are enlisted. I thought everyone is a volunteer in the military right now.
That's true, but enlisted doesn't mean draftee, Leonard. Enlistees also volunteer. So they're all volunteers to the degree that stop-loss orders haven't kept them in beyond their term of service.
Mm-hmm. So these are people who might not have chosen to go into combat if they'd had other options.
Well, they joined the military because anyone who joined in the last 10 years knew it was highly likely, if they were in the ground forces, that they would be going forward. But if you didn't want to go into combat these days, you join the Navy or the Air Force, I reckon.
One of the most surprising statistics is only 38% have been deployed to Iraq or Afghanistan. So it's not just a matter of having been in battle, having suffered from watching a buddy killed, or been near a bomb blast that affected your brain that is causing the suicide rate to escalate?
I'll take that. Well, number one, it's important to realize the military has 1.4 million people in uniform, and large chunks of them, you know, they have not deployed simply because the wars we have been fighting don't affect them. But it's important also to realize, as we try to sort of disentangle the pile of stressors that can lead someone to take his or her own life, that since 9/11, indisputably, being in the military has been a stressful occupation, whether or not you deploy. If you don't deploy, you're still working harder than ever. You have friends who have deployed, and there is just sort of that gray cloud of war hanging over your head. And you do not have to be on whatever it is we define as the front these days in Iraq and Afghanistan to be affected. And I think we see that time and time again among our military men and women.
I'm talking with Mark Thompson, Time Magazine's Deputy Washington Bureau Chief, Nancy Gibbs, the magazine's Deputy Managing Editor, collaborated on an article called The War on Suicide, which is in the current issue of the magazine. We will continue our conversation after we take a little break. Stay with us. We're back with Nancy Gibbs and Mark Thompson of Time Magazine, collaborators on an article in the current issue called The War on Suicide. You mentioned General Peter Chiarelli, who recently retired as the Army's number two in command. He told you that more than 50% of the soldiers who committed suicide while he was vice chief, I guess, had seen a behavioral health specialist and were diagnosed as not being in danger to themselves or others. And then many of those men were dead within days of that diagnosis. Is this an example of soldiers being afraid to acknowledge their depression, or is it something else?
Well, I think that's part of it, but I also think, Leonard, that it's the inability to have a test that is like a test for cancer, that is very binary, that this person has it and this person does not have it. And Chiarelli, who is a battlefield hero of some renown, took the number two job in the Army in 2008, and he was going to wrestle this suicide problem to the ground. And it was pretty profound to talk to him and realize that although he had slowed its growth, he had not been able to reverse it. No general likes to leave the battlefield without a victory.
Well, isn't he also fighting another kind of battle within the military? Army Major General Dana Pittard, commander of the 1st Armored Division at Fort Bliss, Texas, blogged that he was fed up with the selfish troops who killed themselves, leaving others to clean up their mess.
Well, that gets at something that came up again and again and that we've heard since this story was published about it's one thing to have all of the public relations campaigns, all of the messaging about needing to get help when you need it, supporting people who are seeking help, trying to reduce the stigma. Leon Panetta has called suicide prevention a leadership responsibility. Everyone saying the right things about trying to reduce the stigma associated with seeking mental health counseling. But what we hear again and again is that it is still the case that many soldiers feel like it really does put their career at risk if their commanders know that they are seeking treatment, that it might affect their security clearance, that they're no longer perceived as a member of a team, but more someone who could be a threat to their commander's success. And so it's a very mixed message. I think obviously it's much harder for active duty personnel to be seeking help if they think that it could be a career killer.
One of your readers left a comment on the Time website suggesting that the military take a no-consequence vow, allowing soldiers to discuss anything they want with a mental health professional without fear of professional consequences.
Well, that's been the goal, to end the stigma. But as we've seen and as we show in our story, sometimes even that isn't sufficient. Rebecca Morrison, the widow of Ian Morrison, said, my husband was so far beyond the stigma that he sought 6 times in 3 days to get help from his Army. And this is a West Point graduate. And he could not get that help. So it's really, I think, a two-level problem. Number one, you've got to get the soldiers comfortable to say, hey, I'm having a problem. But importantly, number two, someone's got to be there to answer the knock on the door when they come calling.
Well, that commenter also suggested that soldiers be able to seek help for depression without having to disclose it on their security clearance form. So for some soldiers, this really has a lot to do with their future careers, doesn't it?
Well, one commenter pointed out that there's no other profession in which your boss would be quite so involved in your therapy. On the other hand, the military is not like every other profession. And so, there are priorities that are being balanced here. But I think, it's almost too simplistic to focus only on the availability of traditional psychiatric treatment, mental health counseling, medication. And because there's a whole other layer of community support that needs to exist, of creating a culture that is safe for not only people who need help to get help from behavioral therapists, but also, within the community to not feel isolated, to not feel alone. And if they are in trouble with depression, with substance abuse, with issues involving their mental health, that there are people who will see it and be able to reach out to them and provide those kinds of community supports, which is sort of the civilian equivalent of the unit cohesion that they have when they're deployed.
Have there been changes in our culture that might be contributing to this situation as well? Last January, the American Journal of Public Health released findings that soldiers and veterans of Afghanistan and Iraq are at an increased risk for alcohol and drug abuse. Do you think there's a connection between that and the spate of suicides?
Well, I think. Go ahead, Nancy.
Our figure is that about 26% of the suicide cases involve substance abuse. So that certainly is a significant factor. It's by no means in a majority of cases, but it is certainly one factor.
What about the militaries in other countries? Are they experiencing similar increases in suicide rates?
Not that I've seen. I mean, it's interesting to know, just like the American military's percentage of troops with PTSD, it's roughly half the rate, as is the case in the UK and European armies that have gone to the same wars we have gone to. There is some debate whether we measure it with a more precise or flexible yardstick, or you know that the hurdle you have to clear to be diagnosed with PTSD in Britain is higher than it is in the U.S., but I've seen nothing in my reporting that suggests there are big jumps in foreign countries' suicides as there are in our own.
Well, The Independent recently reported that 10% of prison inmates in the United Kingdom are military veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan. I don't know if there's a direct link there, but have we seen a similar increase in the number of servicemen behind bars in this country?
Well, we certainly have started veterans' courts all across the country where soldiers who have come back from the post-9/11 wars, generally charged with crimes against property, not against people, are dealt with in a special case because many of them have PTSD or at least have been diagnosed with PTSD, and they need help more than prison.
I spoke yesterday with a soldier who headed up a unit that dealt with explosives, and he talked about the impact it had on his brain, all of the waves, the bomb waves, and what it did to the nerves in his brain. He's forgotten a lot of things. He's becoming a different person because his brain is reforming. I could see this as a major source of new medicine. Are people doing research in this area?
Well, certainly General Chiarelli is. He's now leading a One Mind for Research outfit on the West Coast. It's true. It's amazing. The most advanced military in the world, with the best weapons, the best troops, the best leadership, the best training, has been really caught short by primitive bombs made out of explosives, hidden by the roadsides, detonated by pressure plates or cell phones. It should, I think, give all of us a sense of humility and to realize that, you know, the most advanced military can't defend against everything, and I think we are now experiencing some of the blowback from that.
But we are developing prosthetic devices and other treatments that are saving lives and allowing people to live better lives than they did after other wars. It doesn't seem to be working here.
Well, because these wars have created a whole new kind of – I mean, the great thing is that the actual casualty rate has been lower because of better body armor, of better protection. But what the injuries that we are seeing and that have really defined these two wars, the kinds of injuries that come from these IEDs, both the loss of limbs, which lead to this incredible research into prosthetics, and the traumatic brain injury, similarly, that these are sort of the defining injuries of these wars. The good thing is that so many injured soldiers are surviving their injuries, which in earlier wars they would not have. These avenues of medicine, of research, would not have happened because there would not have been the patients. They never would have survived these initial blasts. But yes, what we are seeing are real challenges and mysteries that are having to be solved that I think ultimately will affect many people other than those who have suffered their injuries in combat. I think what we're learning particularly about TBI is going to have significant impact on medicine generally.
My guests are Nancy Gibbs and Mark Thompson of Time magazine. They've collaborated on an article called The War on Suicide for the current issue of Time. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Interestingly, we just got a call from a soldier who's returned from Iraq and who says he knows no one who's committed suicide, disagrees with the statistics that you've cited in the article. In his experience, the Army has been like a family and is supportive of soldiers who are struggling with depression.
Good for him.
He's just hanging around with the right crowd?
Well, no. I mean, plainly, by dint of all of the efforts that have been made, there are good stories to tell. But the issue isn't the ones that are saved. The issue is the ones who fall through the cracks and how we can fill those cracks.
You cite a 2008 study that found soldiers who are allowed to answer questions anonymously are 2 to 4 times more likely to report depression or suicidal thoughts. But are they unwilling to admit feeling depressed because of the whole macho aspects of being in the military?
I think this still goes back to the stigma question about, you know, if they admit to the need for help, or even if about finding the time to seek it. The other officer who we profile, Dr. Michael McCadden, was, you know, he had never deployed. He was an OBGYN in an RB hospital in Hawaii, and who had battled depression for years. But when his wife would urge him to get help and tried to get his commanders to order him to get counseling, his response was, you know, just being so busy, the demands on his time were so great that he felt like he would be letting down, you know, fellow residents, fellow doctors, if he took the time out to get the counseling. So again, I think the point Mark made early on, every case is different. Every individual is different. There is no one-size-fits-all explanation or solution.
Last year, an Army private accused of killing a Taliban prisoner by shooting him in the face pleaded guilty despite being diagnosed as schizophrenic. Are more soldiers struggling with other mental health and behavioral issues like ADHD, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder?
Well, we reported a couple of years ago about the immense amounts of medication the Army was giving to soldiers, both those here at home as well as those forward deployed, to deal with issues like that. Plainly, the first 5 years after 9/11, when the economy was good, it was tough for the military to get all the forces it needed to ship them right off to war. Many waivers were issued, some for mental ailments that would have kept them out in times when the military wasn't struggling so much to fill its ranks. So I think there is, you know, 10 years of war is a tremendous grinding force on this cohort, primarily of young men that do the fighting. And we are now beginning to see evidence of some of the fractures that occur after such an arduous experience.
Well, is there a way the military could screen recruits to test their susceptibility to PTSD, depression, or suicide?
That's part of the Holy Grail. That is exactly what they're trying to do. Rutgers just got a $3 million contract to see if there are genetic predispositions for these sorts of problems. Plainly, nobody knows, and Chiarelli will tell you. For a long time, the nation, I don't know, human nature, were so ashamed of mental ailments that they weren't given the investment they needed. He likens it to the war on cancer, to the war against heart disease, where great progress has been made in the last generation or two. We haven't yet seen that sort of progress, he says, in the mental health arena, because nobody wants to talk about the fact that Uncle Al killed himself. Well, maybe, you know, this spate of suicides in the military will be enough of a spur that this sort of research will be done in a far bigger way.
Well, our guest yesterday says he does a lot of running and yoga, and a listener in Manhattan says, or has written in to say, is someone who suffered from PTSD from causes not related to warfare, found yoga and meditation in conjunction with therapy are the most effective ways to heal trauma. Has the military tried to use alternative methods to treat soldiers?
Oh, yes. They've used everything from aromatherapy to yoga to massage to acupuncture to therapy dogs. I mean, the military is not hiding in this one. They are seeking help. They are reaching out.
Last year, the Marine Corps began requiring troops to stay together for the first 3 months back home. I guess the idea is to help ease the transition back to civilian life by allowing soldiers to process their experiences and decompress together. Do we know if that program has been effective?
Well,
the Marine numbers have. Am I right, Mark, that they have seen a much bigger reduction in there. It's the Army that continues to have the problem. The Marines have been much more successful in bringing their suicide rate down. What I would just add to go back to an earlier comment is where I'm very grateful was the willingness of Rebecca Morrison and Leslie McCadden to talk to Mark about their experiences, their husband's experiences, because, again, the more stories that can be told. This is obviously an excruciating time for them. Their husband's death occurred only a matter of months ago, and their willingness to speak with us, I think, and to help bring a spotlight on this, bring some understanding, is really essential to looking for solutions.
Well, survivors of suicide, I mean, the people, the loved ones, also have real problems to have to deal with, emotional problems they have to deal with. They often blame themselves to some degree for not having done enough.
That's certainly true, but I think what we see in this instance, Leonard, is these two women said, my God, this is terrible. How can I make it a little less terrible? And that is really what motivated them to speak to us with the help of the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, which is a group that gathers up these forlorn families after some tragedy like this strikes, be it in combat or be it suicide, and shows them at least they are not alone.
Does the military provide any of that support?
Yes, they do. They provide a fair amount of support, but they provide it in a military way. It's not always well done. I mean, the TAP suicide program, for example, is run by a woman, Kim Ruoko, whose husband himself killed himself in between Iraq deployments. So when you get a community of interest like that, these people who have been through that are the best ones to help those going through it now.
Thank you both so much for being on our show. Mark Thompson is Time Magazine's Deputy Washington Bureau Chief. Nancy Gibbs is the magazine's Deputy Managing Editor. Their article, The War on Suicide, is in the current issue of Time Magazine. Thank you again.
Thank you, Leonard.
You're welcome, Leonard.